This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, September the 28th. I'm Angela Denning. A Petersburg man has pleaded guilty to transporting child pornography and will be sentenced for that crime in December. Joe Vicnicki reports.
28-year-old Marvin Jackson entered a guilty plea in U.S. District Court September 14th. He signed a plea agreement with prosecutors in August. Jackson was arrested at Petersburg's airport January 18th after arriving on the morning flight that day. He was charged with second-degree misconduct involving a controlled substance after local police found 22 grams of heroin inside a shampoo bottle, along with hypodermic needles in his baggage. He has pleaded not guilty in that case, but a change of plea hearing in state superior court is scheduled for December 12th. During that investigation, police seized Jackson's Samsung smartphone and found multiple sexually explicit images of children between the ages of 3 and 7. Local police served a search warrant at Jackson's Lumber Street home in May and seized more evidence. A federal grand jury returned an indictment on pornography charges, and Jackson was arrested in June. Sentencing in that case is scheduled for December 20th, and Jackson remains in custody. In a press release, the Petersburg Police Department thanks Assistant U.S. Attorney Jack Schmidt and Federal Bureau of Investigation agents in Southeast for their work on that case. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
A Petersburg man was arraigned Monday in Petersburg courthouse for allegedly kidnapping a female victim, assaulting her with a knife, and raping her. According to local police, Joshua Hall Blewett, age 28, restrained a female, sexually assaulted her, and assaulted her with a utility knife. The victim was taken to the Petersburg Medical Center for evaluation and treatment. She spoke with officers and advocates there. That was on September 10th. The same day, police arrested Blewett for a domestic violence assault charge. Officers continued to investigate and later served a search warrant at Blewett's residence. Police say evidence was seized from the scene that corroborated initial information. On September 15th, a grand jury indicted Blewett on three separate charges: assault in the third degree, sexual assault in the first degree, and kidnapping. All are felony-level crimes. Blewett is currently in custody awaiting trial. No date has been scheduled yet. His bail has been set at $35,000, cash only. Assistant District Attorney Chris Orman is representing the state of Alaska. Blewett is being represented by a public defender, Deborah McCauley. About 4,500 acres of heavily logged forest were returned to wilderness under a deal involving the federal government and a Southeast Alaska Native Corporation. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The U.S. Forest Service purchased the acreage near Cube Cove on the west side of Admiralty Island. It's about 30 miles south of Juneau and 20 miles north of Angoon. Just under $4 million was paid to the owner, Shiataka, the Sitka-based Native Corporation. It comes from the Forest Service's Land and Water Conservation Fund. Recreation Lands and Minerals Director James King says the property is surrounded by Admiralty Island National Monument and its Kootsnuwu Wilderness Area.
And this restores the concept of creating an island and a monument that is left relatively intact.
The purchase price covers two of 13 parcels of Cube Cove land owned by Shiataka. The total area is about 22,000 acres, and the full value is about $18.3 million. The once-forested area was acquired by the corporation under terms of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. It was extensively logged over an 18-year period ending in 2002. King says the Forest Service may spend additional funds to speed its restoration.
It's possible that as we do further analysis on it, that if we determine to better help the habitat, that thinning may occur, but those decisions have not been made yet.
He says the agency hopes to purchase the remaining Cube Cove acreage, which includes three lakes, over time, but that depends on future federal budgets. The sale is also part of legislation introduced by Alaska U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski earlier this year. Some environmental groups have said it would allow Shiataka to purchase and log timberlands on Prince of Wales Island. Chiatica president and CEO Ken Cameron says the Native Corporation hasn't decided what to do with the $4 million it's being paid. Cameron, who declined to be recorded, says it's on the agenda for a fall planning meeting. He says the corporation understands further sales depend on congressional appropriations. The purchase, announced September 16th, has its critics. The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council's Buck Lindekugel calls it a mixed bag.
We're glad that these valuable lands will be back in public ownership where they can heal. It's sad, though, on the other hand, because, you know, we worked really hard in the 1980s and early 90s to see if we could come up with an exchange so that the Lake Florence and Lake Kathleen could have been returned to public ownership before they were clear-cut.
In an interview earlier this year, Sitka Conservation Society Executive Director Andrew Tomes says it seemed like an odd deal.
And now, in this situation, the government would buy back the lands that were logged, and Chiatica made a profit on them, and now the government's buying them back from them. It's a strange situation.
And Sea Alaska shareholder Mike Kinville says the corporation shouldn't give up any of its property.
Chiatica is not making what is, in my opinion, sound decisions. To sell our last piece of land concerns me.
The purchase was announced in a joint press release from the federal agency and the corporation. King of the Forest Service says there's a reason these particular parcels were bought first.
It was determined that the most logical way to purchase the lands was to start at the backs of the property or the furthest from the water and purchase our way out to the waterfront so that we didn't isolate pieces of property without access to them.
The Forest Service says buying up wilderness inholdings is a high priority for the Tongass and is listed in its land management plan. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
Candidates for state office representing Southeast Alaska presented a wide range of approaches to fixing the state's multi-billion dollar budget crisis. Ideas range from use of permanent fund earnings to an income tax to more budget cuts to harvesting natural resources. KFSK's Joe Vicknicki has more on that.
Five candidates for state office appeared on a legislative panel hosted by Southeast Conference during that organization's annual meeting in Petersburg. They aren't all the candidates running for office in the region. The candidates were asked what they saw as the right balance of new revenues for the state. Ketchikan State Representative Dan Ortez, an independent who caucused with the House minority, called it a travesty that the legislature didn't come up with a fiscal plan. Ortez thought the legislature would have to start voting on revenue measures this session.
We're going to have to look at permanent fund earnings as a source of revenue, at least in the short term, for our operating budget, which means we need to restructure the permanent fund. But in doing so, I honestly believe that that's the best hope that we have of preserving a permanent fund dividend into the future.
Ortez also thought the best of some bad alternatives is an income tax and said he'd prefer that over a sales tax. He thought the state would have to look for other revenue and also continue to cut spending. One of Ortez's opponents for the House District 36 seat, Ketchikan Republican Bob Sievertson, did not put too much stock in an income tax.
Prosperity isn't gauged at how well the bureaucracy is doing it, but it's private business. We need to get out of their way. We're going to have to use our natural resources as a big part of this long term. We talk about an income tax, and when you look at 43% of the state will pay that. It'll raise approximately $330 million. We don't know what it'll cost to administrate it yet. When you're talking about over a $3 billion hole, $330 million doesn't get it done.
Sievertson thought it would be a multi-year process to fix the budget. Constitution Party candidate Kenneth Shaw is also running for that House seat representing Ketchikan and Wrangell. Another candidate for a state House, Sitka Republican Sheila Finkenbinder, is seeking the District 35 seat representing Sitka, Petersburg, and most of Prince of Wales Island and a number of smaller villages.
Being a brand new candidate here, it's a little early for me to be speaking very intelligently about sources of revenue, but Like Mr. Ortiz, I've been listening to my constituents, or not yet constituents, voters. When we're talking about taxes, they are preferring an income tax if it comes to that over a sales tax. People talk about the education tax that they used to pay and the income tax that people used to pay here. I've also heard ideas such as the fish box tax for charter guided and unguided charter fishermen that take a lot of fish out of this state.
Finkenbinder also thought the state would have to restructure the permanent fund and promote new business to bring in more money to Alaska. Finkenbinder is challenging incumbent Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins for that seat. He had a prior engagement and did not appear at the legislative panel. Juneau Democrat Sam Keto III told the gathering that the legislature would not be able to make significant reductions in spending for some of the largest pieces of the state budget without significant negative impacts to the state's economy. He suggested capping the permanent fund dividend and using the fund's earnings would help cover a big part of the state's budget deficit.
What the governor has put forward puts a lot of components and tools on the table that we can use in the legislature to figure out how we're going to identify or divide up that revenue stream so that we can have a real discussion about what our state's going to look like in 5 or 10 years. And if we don't do something this year, I think most people have said, and I agree, that we end up in a situation where we could very well send our state's economy into a recession.
Keto is running unopposed for a seat representing Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman is also unopposed for his seat. Stedman thought the legislature would have to continue scaling back state spending.
And if we don't do that and just plug the hole with this tax, that tax, or the next guy's tax, all we're going to do is be right back in the same boat in 2 or 3 years. So you'll see more budget reductions coming over the next 2, 3 years or so, and they're going to be relatively painful because the easy cuts have already been done.
Stedman represents most of southern and central southeast Alaska. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott ended his keynote speech to Southeast Conference with the belief that state government would have to make necessary changes.
I believe the 2017 legislature will do what it must because the alternatives are too draconian to consider.
Governor Walker last year proposed a wide array of budget cuts and new revenue sources to make up for a deficit of over $4 billion. The legislature did not enact any of Walker's revenue proposals, but did cut state spending. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Petersburg High School girls' cross-country team took first place at the region meet in Sitka Saturday, nabbing 4 of the top five spots. Sitka came in second in the girls' race, followed by Mount Edgecombe. Wrangell's Rain Hutton took first with a time of 20 minutes and 11 seconds. Petersburg took the next four spots with Kaylee Eddy in second, Shyla Cook in third, Melanie Chase in fourth, and Erin Funt in fifth. Julia Murph placed 10th, Megan Parker was 18th, and Ava Lenhard was 30th for Petersburg. Petersburg senior Kaylee Eddy ran her season best time and says she had two teammates not far behind.
Yeah, Shyla and Melanie kept me on my toes through the whole race. Shyla actually was right behind me side by side, kind of chasing me down the whole race, and then Melanie stayed really close until about the last mile. She teetered off a little bit, but she still had her personal best too, so it was really good.
It's Eddie's fourth year in a row to qualify for the state race and her third regional team title. She's hoping to break 21 minutes in her final race, just 4 seconds under her regional time. Petersburg coach Tommy Thompson says good weather conditions set the team up for some good finishing times in Sitka.
Overall, the girls had 4 or 5 personal bests, and the boys 4 or 5 personal bests on what has been for us not our fastest course.
The boys' team placed fourth behind Sitka, Mount Edgecombe, and Skagway. Sitka dominated the boys' race, taking 6 of the top 11 spots. Senior Nathaniel Lenhard was Petersburg's top runner, coming in 12th, and he ran a personal record, or PR, in Sitka.
I think the boys, they did really well. About 5 of them got PRs, and I don't think we really could have done better. It's too bad that we didn't quite make it to state, but there's always next year. Most of those people who got PRs are freshmen, actually, and they're doing really good. I'm sure the team will get better.
Cole Spurl placed 22nd. Tolan Eddy was 24th. Thomas Durkin was 31st. Corin Spurl placed 33rd, Noah Sullivan in 37th, and Daniel Holmberg was 48th. The girls qualify as a team for this weekend's state race at Bartlett High School. It's the fifth year in a row the girls have qualified for the state race, and last year they came in fourth as a team. Nathaniel Lenhard qualifies as an individual runner at this weekend's state championships. And this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.